It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast. Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another edition of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Today, we have a co-founder of Van West Partners, a Denver-based real estate investment firm focusing on the acquisition and management of self-storage centers and other real estate throughout the United States. They've established themselves with a track record of over $250 million in real estate assets. Jacob is our guest today, and his partner's success is driven by a commitment to delivering an expertly executed, adaptable strategy with an institutional investment approach. Let's welcome Jacob Vanderslice. Hi, Jacob. How are you?
Mark, good to see you. Thanks for having us on today. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Glad to have you here. So you're in one of my favorite businesses, although I'm only invested in it from time to time through REITs. But I've always wanted to have my own self-storage and my own mobile home park. I know it's kind of random, but those seem like two of the most, well, close to passive income. I don't think there is any real true passive income unless you have everything totally run by somebody else. And even then, you kind of have to watch it. But tell us about how you guys got into business and what the prospects are for the business these days.
Well, let me start by saying your dream is admirable, but I'll tell you, the grass is always greener on the other
for
side.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Everything. Yeah. Our business is the opposite of passive. It's operationally intensive. We got people sleeping in units. We got break-ins. We got theft. We got trucks backing into gates. There's always something going on, but we have fun. We got started in real estate way back in 06. And for many years, we did a lot of single family fix and flips and rentals. We'd buy deals at the trustee sales, fix them up and either rent them or sell them. Did it all over the country, mainly in Denver. Then we got a commercial real estate in 13 and 14. We did some adaptive reuse retail, and we've done some multifamily along the way, some townhome development, and we looked at storage for a while. And one thing we didn't like about our business is we thought it was kind of much more clear in retrospect, obviously, but it was overly transactional. We were buying and selling too often and too quickly.
You mean the flip business?
Yeah. You're always kind of eating what you kill, right? And you know, there's a cash flow element to holding rentals and financing them responsibly. But we were just buying and selling too often. So we looked at storage for a while. We liked the fact that it's downside protected. It's been fairly resilient in recessions. It's a little bit less operationally intensive than maybe multifamily, for example. So we did our first storage deal in 15. It was a development project here in Denver. And at the time, it wasn't really an intentional strategic shift to a new asset class. It was more like any new venture. Hey, let's try a deal out and see how it goes. And it went okay. So we did another one. And over time, we evolved to primarily being a self-storage owner operator. So today, we've got 38 facilities. We got to update our little bio there, but about $300 million in AUM, just over 18,000 units in 14 different states. So we generally target inefficiently operated storage facilities. Their operating expenses are above market. Their rents are below market. Sometimes they don't have a website. And most of our value creation comes from operating the deal more effectively.
Floored by the fact that they wouldn't have a website. Like that gets me.
Yeah. Some of these mom and pops don't even have websites. Sometimes they don't ever increase rates. We bought a deal in Illinois a couple years ago, and they did have a website, but on the website, you couldn't lease a unit. And they also advertised the fact that they don't ever raise rates on their customers. And a big component of creating value in self-storage, because all your leases are month to month, is if you have a unit type that's really full on occupancy, you can raise rents on your customer base with a 30-day notice and likely not get a lot of move-outs. So most of these deals we'll target are just kind of inefficiently operated. They have a low basis. People kind of fell into the business 10 or 15 years ago. They want to monetize it, and we can pay them a premium, what they view as a premium based on their trailing NOI, because we know we can likely grow that NOI fairly quickly.
Well, I've got to ask you the question. Like, I know it's crazy, but is the business still growing? Like, to me, why do we need to store so much junk as Americans? And is that cause the business to still grow, or are people wising up?
Yeah, there's a lot of components answering that question. As it relates to new supply, first of all, some submarkets are oversupplied, some submarkets are undersupplied. So for example, Phoenix right now, a lot of people have the same idea at the same time. A bunch of deals are coming out of the ground, and we're seeing rates and occupancies drop because of all the competition. With that being said, though, on the consumer demand side, there's self-storage in other countries, but not like we have here. Americans inherently collect things, and they don't want those things in their house, but they don't want to get rid of them. For example, I had a storage unit, and I had a storage unit at one of our facilities, and we ended up putting an industrial tenant there. So we removed the storage, put a new tenant in, and I had to find a place for my stuff. And I moved in at a teaser rate. It's like a 10 by 20. It's 2 blocks away from our office. And it's my skis, old mountain bikes, seasonal gear, a bunch of family heirloom furniture that's sentimental, but I don't want it in my house. And I moved in. I was like, all right, next month or two, I'm going to get this thing cleaned out. I'm going to give some stuff to my sister. I'm going to donate some stuff. Over 1 year later and two rate increases, I'm paying $300 a month.
Wow.
Every time it hits my credit card, it's an annoyance, but not enough of an annoyance for me to block my schedule with two little kids and a job and go over there and clean out the unit for a day. So that's our average customer. People just, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. They don't want to deal with it. We did an analysis on our current fund that we're closing down, Fund Three, and we haven't owned the deals this long, but over 50% of our customers have been storing in these facilities for over 3 years.
Wow.
So you would think a month-to-month lease, right? It's not a very sticky customer base. Well, it actually is. People stay there for much longer than they anticipate.
I get it. I mean, I could see that it's just below the threshold where you've got the pain to go clean it out. I get it. And but at the end of the year, it's like all other subscriptions, right? Whether it's our Apple or our Netflix, it ends up to be $3,600 in your case. But
I
it
could have
does
bought
happen.
new stuff,
Yeah. And so
right?
are you running these things like somebody lives there and then they run it for you? Or have you got it figured out where it's mostly automated and you just have somebody, part-time checking it out? What's your business model look like mostly?
Well, I'll tell you, we don't have anything figured out. But we did experiment with remote management some years ago, and we found that our customer experience kind of suffered without having an on-site manager there. And if you think about it, let's say you're going to Starbucks in the morning, you do your mobile order on your iPhone, you show up, your coffee's on the counter, you're excited to be there, right? You want your coffee, you're excited to walk into Starbucks, there's music playing, you're getting your day started. If
Sure.
you're storing, no matter how good the circumstances are around why you're storing, you probably don't want to be there, right? Even if you're getting like a job upgrade and you're moving into a bigger house, you don't want to be going to your storage unit. So our on-site managers have a really important role in kind of making our customers happy during an experience that's otherwise not overly positive. So we do have some remote managed facilities that operate as kind of nearby satellite locations to a staff facility. So we might have like a big facility and a mile away, we've got a smaller satellite location. But all of our deals are staffed with the exception of some of those satellite locations. And it's a big expense. Finding talent and retaining talent is challenging, especially in certain markets. But we found that having staff on site vastly improves our customer experience. There's a big sort of revolution and shift in a lot of operators doing remote managed facilities. And it can work, but you do miss that personal touch and that customer experience when there's a person there.
I just remember the last time I went to a U-Haul to rent something, there was somebody living in the front apartment unit.
Yeah,
So,
we do have some of those deals. If we're
yeah.
we do development projects here and there, and if we're building a new facility, we're not doing an on-site apartment, but a lot of the deals that we'll buy that are existing value-add acquisitions will have a residential unit on site. And we'll typically put our on-site manager in there. It's very rare that we'll lease one of those to a third party.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of a little amenity and benefit for our on-site. We can we can give them slightly, we can compensate them by virtue of living that unit, and it's not directly out of our pocket.
Got it.
Hey, it's Mark Yeagy here to tell you about our cash flow machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2 to 4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2 to 4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000 to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io. www.wealthwithmoneyinvestor.io, and you can learn more.
All right, so we've basically laid the foundation for this as an investment. So I assume that you have a fund that you're probably talking about and that you want to bring in new people to invest. Why would somebody want to invest in storage? I know why I would, but I have to set you up with the question.
Well, let me talk about all the reasons someone would not want to invest in storage, specifically in a private syndication or fund. First of all, generally, depending on how someone is structured, if you're investing in a multifamily syndication or a storage deal, whatever it might be, you're a limited partner. You have membership interest in the LLC that owns the project, but your equity is at risk, right? You're not a debt investor. You're not a lender. If there's a problem with the deal, and there's been a lot of deal problems, as you know, the last couple of years, you're at risk of loss. The second reason you may not want to do it is generally, depending on how the deal is structured, investors have a lack of liquidity. So if you own REIT stocks, which it sounds like you might, you can sell those stocks and get a wire transfer to your Schwab account the next day, right? In a private syndication or fund vehicle, you're generally stuck as an investor and as a partner for the duration of the life of the vehicle. So those are kind of some of the downsides. The upsides, though, are alternatives and private placements within the real estate space are a really good way to diversify, and you have access in most cases to the principals if you have a question. If you invest in Amazon stock, you're not going to be able to call up Bezos, not that he's a CEO anymore, to answer a question about performance. So it's a little more of an intimate experience with the people that are executing the strategy. The other benefit to it is there are tax benefits as well. Depending on how the deal is structured, all the depreciation is flowing through to investors. So even though you might be getting cash flow off of the vehicle, your taxable income on that cash flow is largely reduced because of that depreciation offset. As it relates to self-storage, there's a few reasons why we like the asset class. One is, as I mentioned earlier, all the leases are month to month. So we can respond real time to supply and demand changes at the unit level and also the submarket level. And our customers like that because they have the freedom to come and go as they please, even though they stay a lot longer than they think. The other reason we like it too is the revenue streams are very granular. So let's say you're buying an industrial building with a single tenant. If that tenant rolls over on you, you got a big problem, right? Yeah, you have to come up with leasing commission dollars and TI dollars and a lot of downtime to find a new tenant in there, not to mention service your debt if they roll over on you. Well, in storage, we have thousands of customers paying us between $30 to $300 a month. And the chances that a big portion of them are going to roll over all at the same time is pretty low. So we like that kind of granular, small bite-sized revenue streams that are tiny on an individual unit level, but they're big when you have a lot of units.
That makes sense.
And then finally, we like that it's been historically recession resistant. So when there is a downturn or a dislocation event, typically American mobility is the fundamental demand driver in storage. So if you're losing your job or you're getting divorced or you're have something good happen, you're getting a new job, you're getting married, upsizing or downsizing your home, upswings in the economy create mobility and so do downswings. So it's been historically fairly resilient in terms of downside protection. And we care about upside, but we care a lot more about downside.
Got it. What is a typical investor's timeline horizon, and what kind of internal rates of return are you guys showing approximately?
Well, we're whatever IRR and multiple we're targeting and marketing, we never hit it. It's either higher or it's lower, right? A deal never goes exactly like the spreadsheet suggests it will. But realized IRRs, I'll give you two examples here. So we sold a single asset syndication last year in Florida, and I think our targeted IRR was 16%. The deal did a 7% IRR. We made money, but it didn't perform like we thought it would. We're selling two deals tomorrow. And those deals were underwritten at a 17% IRR, and they're going to generate a 36% IRR.
Wow.
So the point being, when you're investing in anything, private placement stocks, whatever the case might be, whatever you've got modeled out on your 5 or 10 year return profile, it's probably always going to be better or it's going to be worse. It never goes like the model says it will.
Yeah.
But we generally target underwritten IRRs of mid to high teens, depending on the deal type. Multiples over the life of the deals are low to mid twos. Multiple meaning If you put 100K in, we endeavor to return 200 to 250 back to you over the life of the vehicle.
Including capital gains and income, right?
Yeah, so all in. So a component of that multiple is going to be distributions from operational cash flow along the way, possible distributions from refinance proceeds, and then, of course, your distributions on a sale event. So all in over the life of the vehicle. Hold periods, we generally underwrite between 5 to 7 years, depending on the deal type. But if we create a scenario where we can return a substantial portion of the original capital without selling, we'll certainly do that. And we generally like to hold for a while. We're not traders. We'll sell deals when it makes sense to monetize after only owning them for a couple of years. But our thesis has generally been, we want to build a sustainable asset base that's durable and that's responsibly financed and enjoy those benefits during the hold period and eventually monetize that when it's appropriate.
What questions am I not asking? Because there's a lot of things that I don't know about your business that I probably should know and should ask, but what am I missing?
Well, one interesting thing about the space is a lot of people don't realize that a pretty meaningful portion of our revenue is ancillary income streams. And by ancillary income streams, a few examples are late fees, U-Haul rentals, merchandise sales, selling like boxes, tape
yeah.
Packing materials.
Sure.
But another big one is tenant insurance. So believe it or not, in self-storage, it's customary when you sign your lease that the owner is not responsible for the contents of the unit. So if there's a fire, theft, or flood, or whatever the case might be, and your stuff gets stolen or damaged, it's not on the owner of the facility to reimburse you. So we require our customers to either present proof of coverage on their homeowner's policy or buy a protection plan from us. So when you rent a car at the airport, you probably decline the insurance, I'm guessing, because you have coverage on your auto policy. You want to spend that premium. Well, the margin on that insurance is enormous. So we spend about $2 per month per unit to our carrier and insurance premiums. And we charge our customers between $10 to $20 a month, depending on the unit type. And that net arbitrage, just make the numbers round, say it's $10 a month. It may not seem like a lot. But when you amortize that across thousands of units, you annualize that and you put a cap rate on it, that's a lot of value creation just from slinging a little insurance policy. So all of those income streams combined comprise between 10 to 13% of our top line revenue. So it's pretty meaningful. Yeah. So if you buy a deal, an existing facility that doesn't have those income streams in place, and many of ours don't, if you do nothing else in the first year, and we certainly endeavor to do a lot more, but if you do nothing else in the first year, you can increase your revenue by 10% just by adding late fees, protection plans, renting U-Hauls. So it's a meaningful component of the revenue stream in the business, for sure.
Wow. Well, with 300 million assets under management, you guys sound like you're doing some things right. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, we get a little less stupid every year. Yeah, we don't know so much what to do, but we know a lot of what not to do.
Eventually, you'll figure it all out, and then you'll die, and it'll start over again.
Yeah. Probably. I'm not sure if I get enough runway to figure it all out, but I'm trying. I'm studying up.
How can people find out a little bit more about you, Jacob, and if they want to invest or get involved with you guys?
Yeah, we always love to talk shop about real estate. People can hit me on LinkedIn, Jacob Vanderslice, or they can go to our website, VanWestPartners.com.
VanWestPartners.com. We'll put all the links in the show notes. Things like that. Well, thanks so much for your time and shedding light on the storage industry. I think it's so fascinating that we continue to pour money into the storage business and companies like yours and investors get to take advantage of that. So,
I'm getting raked over the coals on the consumer side, but enjoying the benefits being on the ownership side. So I'm riding both.
I get it. Thanks for your time and your wisdom. And everybody that's watching and listening, thanks for being part of the Wealth Architect Podcast. Remember what I always say, never give up your power and your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, and I'll see you next time. Take care.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.